What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 136 of the Lukewarm Games Podcast, your source for unique perspectives on all things video games and pop culture. I'm your host, Luke Lewis, and I'm once again joined by the returning Pizza Bet Game Awards champion. It's Claire Hellenberger.
Ooh, what?
Hey, Luke. Are you hyped?
I am hyped. I'm ready to win another Pizza Bet.
You're bringing the heat.
Yes.
For our annual Game Awards predictions and Pizza Bets. This episode's coming out a few days later than usual so that we could react and talk about all of the Game Awards nominees for 2023 leading up to the show on December 7th. Jeff Keighley and his team put out the list on Monday as of this week. You'll be listening to this episode on Wednesday. So we have a lot to talk about. We've got the news segment essentially is our title track main topic of the show this week because we're going to be breaking down all of the categories minus the esports stuff just because, you know, historically, yeah, we don't have much to say there, so yes. we will kick things off, and we're going to make some predictions, and as always, we'll keep track of who wins and who loses in the afterfact. This is the fourth year we've done this, I believe?
Third year?
Let's do math real quick. We did it in 2020. Year. We did it in 2021. We did it in 2022.
So this is the fourth
year. This is the fourth year. We've been doing this podcast for a minute, so that's exciting. So I'm pretty sure, I want to say we're 50-50, because I think I won the first year, and then I think we've kind of alternated between winners. So I'm excited to do this. This is one of my favorite episodes that we get the chance, reoccurring, you know, this and our game of the year is one of our fun ones. So
I think they're all fun, for the record. I do too, but I guess.
Like, for example, like, we do a lot of reviews coverage, but you don't necessarily, like, know ahead of time that, like, the review 6 months from now for an indie that we don't know we're going to play is going to be a banger.
But this
Whereas this is consistently every year, this is a really fun episode.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's fair.
Okay, should we get right into things?
Let's do it.
So we're going to start with, I think this is kind of an odd category, but it's fun nonetheless, with most anticipated games. So this is highlighting an upcoming title that has demonstrably illustrated potential to push the gaming medium forward. These are the descriptions from the Game Awards themselves. So our nominees are the following. We have Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Hades 2, Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, Star Wars Outlaws, and Tekken 8. I've actually played one of these games, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Played Tekken at PAX. What do you think of this one, Claire? So essentially, this is like a popularity thing of like, which one's the internet most excited about?
This is definitely one of those before the Game Awards.
I believe Zelda won this last year, so like.
But, and it was like, and like, it was Starfield and like.
It's more of just like a hype check. That's what I think.
It's an interesting one because it's like you can either pick what you are most excited for, or you can pick what you think everybody else is most excited for.
Yeah.
So maybe I think there are some categories each year where we're like, this is what I want to win, but this is what I'm actually predicting.
This is your official prediction. Yeah, totally.
So for me, I'm most excited about Hades 2, and I know that there's a ton of other people out there who are super excited about Hades 2. I think that there's probably more hype in general for Final Fantasy, obviously.
Yep.
Which is a very much hotly anticipated sequel. And then I also think that there is a lot of hype for Star Wars Outlaws, which has been very anticipated for a long time. But I think Final Fantasy is going to win this category. Final Fantasy VII, Rebirth. I'm excited for this one too.
Heck yeah. I think similar boat of I think I'm most excited for Hades 2 personally, but I think the zeitgeist of the internet is very excited for Rebirth. I am as well. Everything we've seen from the game publicly has looked stunning. I adored the Part 1 remake. Was my favorite Final Fantasy game, my big introduction into the series by far, so yeah, I enjoyed 16 for what it was this year, but I think going back to Final Fantasy VII is really exciting. So I concur that I think that is going to take it. So let's jump to next up. We have Best Multiplayer presented by Discord.
Nice.
The nominees are interesting on this one, though, because I feel like historically we always get a bunch of Call of Duty, a bunch of shooters, a bunch of like games as a service type titles, but check out these nominees because I think this is an interesting year. Baldur's Gate 3,
okay,
Diablo 4.
That makes sense.
Party Animals.
Cool.
Street Fighter 6.
Mm-hmm.
And New Super Mario Bros. Wonder. So, like I said, we don't have a Call of Duty. We don't have, like, a Valorant or a competitive shooter here.
Yeah.
We have, you know, we have a couple RPGs. We have Party Animals, which, party co-op game. Fighting game with Street Fighter. And then, obviously, New Super Mario Bros. So, I want to walk through strategically my thought process here.
Sure, yeah, go for it.
But I think I'm going to put not Diablo, Baldur's Gate as my prediction.
Okay.
Because I think that has been the hot topic of conversation within gaming industry. And the folks that have played it in co-op have sung its praises, have talked about how it feels like they're really squatting up with their D&D groups and going out and having these true adventures. It also has split-screen co-op, so if you're playing on the PS5 version as well as the PC version, you can play co-op, which I think is really dope. So I'm going to throw that one up there, and I think that game is so popular and on the top of everyone's mind right now that I think it's a slam dunk. Wonder, I think, is a weird one to be on this list because I want to love it in co-op,
but the camera
controls make it so impossible to love this game, and we've only played it 2-player, but I've heard from folks that played 4-player.
There are definitely some levels that I can't
basically
imagine.
Unplayable.
Yeah, I can't imagine
like
doing
it
with 4 people.
Because you have to be so precise, and it's just kind of frustrating.
Well, the camera, like, when the ones where you're moving really, mm-hmm. really fast, and the camera's pretty close in on you, like, how do you do that?
And
so,
instead of the thing they did with New Super Mario Bros. Wii, and historically with 2D co-op Mario games, when you go into the bubble, you have to be popped in 5 seconds or you lose a life. Whereas previously, you could just bubble out
along.
And then float along and the person could get past the hard part and then you could come back in. So I think they missed the mark with this one. So I don't think it honestly deserves to hang.
I just feel like Lego has this down.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you're together, the screen's together. When you drift apart, the screen splits. How hard
is it? I don't know if I want Mario to do that, but I just feel like the bubble thing alone makes it, like, a deal breaker for me.
What
I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't like the fact that it switches who has camera control, because
you don't know.
Yeah,
yeah,
if you're player
you're
one
like, oh,
and
shoot,
I know I have camera control, at least I can kind of account for that, but it switches so often based on who's doing, you know, well in the level up until that point.
You should be at least able to decide,
like,
who
your
is
party
in control.
Leader. Yeah.
Especially if you're as a family. It's like, I don't want the 4-year-old to somehow spontaneously be in charge of the camera.
Sure. That said, I am overall positive on Mario Wonder. I think it's a really cool, delightful new twist. And we'll get to it because it's nominated in other categories. But for this particular award, I don't think this one vibes with me.
Yeah.
Similar thoughts about Party Animals. I think it's fun, but I personally enjoy Gang Beasts more. I enjoy Fall Guys more. While I think there's a lot of character and fun and humor to be had with Party Animals, I just didn't really feel the depth of gameplay. Like, I didn't really feel that interested in continuing to play after a night or two with the game.
That's fair. Now, I'm curious, how many other categories is Baldur's Gate nominated in?
I believe 7. So it has 8 total nominees.
So it's not like this is the only thing it's nominated for.
Correct. No,
and
it's
going to get it
very
so that
much,
they give it an award.
It's very much not. Spoilers, it's up for Game of the Year. It's up for numerous other things. Best RPG,
right.
I believe best narrative, music, multiple. We'll see it again in multiple other places. Are you playing the strategic thing in your mind of like, this game might get honored here? I always find that bites myself in the foot, in a sense of if you overthink it,
right?
You know, but
I
go with your gut. So I'm locking in Baldur's Gate for this one.
Because, like, in some past years, you know, sometimes we, like, agree too much. You and I, we're too agreeable with each other. And then it, like, comes down to, like, 3 categories that we had different answers for.
Sure.
And then we're tied for the rest. So I like to throw in some contrarian picks. Like, I think that it would definitely make sense for Baldur's Gate to win this award.
But I also think Diablo and Street Fighter are solid answers as well.
So I'm going to pick
nominees as well.
I'm
like,
gonna
super
pick
deserved.
Something else instead. I'm torn between Diablo and Street Fighter 6. Because I feel like I've heard really positive things about both. I've heard, like, more things about Diablo than I've heard about Street Fighter 6. I heard more about Street Fighter before it came out. So I think I'm going to go Diablo.
Okay. Love it. And that's another one that's... I commend them for having local and online options.
Yeah.
Street Fighter has local and online options as well, in all fairness. But I think it's cool for a big top-down RPG.
Yeah.
Isometric style to have that option.
You know, I will say what is missing from this category is a game that we reviewed like two months ago at this point, and that's Baccarat,
which was honestly great. I would have loved to see that co-op especially game. Over Mario or Party Animals. Yeah. Like
I think with that one
that got swept under the rug, and I don't think a lot of folks played it, unfortunately. Yeah. No. But hopefully, because we've talked about it so many times on this podcast, you keep it on your radar.
If you are a true fan of Lukewarm Games, you will go.
You will play.
Find someone. Get on a Discord
call. It's like $6.
Discord is sponsoring this.
This category.
You'll get on a Discord call, and you play Baccarat with a friend.
Could Discord sponsor this show, perhaps?
Could Discord sponsor Baccarat? You get, play that game. It's
incredible. Very good. Tweet at us. And tell us you played it also. Yeah. I just want to know.
Tell us which character you were and what you thought about that.
Heck yeah. All right. Cool. So locking that one in. Next up, we have Best Sports and Racing Games. Our nominees are EA Sports FC 24. We have F1 23. Forza Motorsport. Hot Wheels Unleashed 2. And the Crew Motor Fest.
You know, there's a lot of numbers in this category.
There's a lot of numbers in this one. I will throw out, I've only played Forza, so I don't know if I'm the most, like, knowledgeable on all of these games. I've read reviews for these. I've followed coverage of these. I thought the first Hot Wheels Unleashed game was awesome, and I've heard that the second one just kind of ramps it up.
Looked really cool with the things that it was doing with the tracks and stuff. Yeah. Are you going to choose Forza?
I'm going to choose Forza because I think it's the mainline choice. I think it's safe. I think it's the racing game that those of us... I consider myself a racing game fan, but I don't delve into annual releases and play all these games. Yeah. But like when there's a Forza, when there's a Gran Turismo, I'm jumping it. You know, when there's a mainline staple flagship series, I'm playing. And I thought Forza Motorsport, I don't think I've talked about it on the podcast yet, but I played about 20 hours of that game this fall. It's just a nice, like, relaxed podcast chill game for me.
Yeah.
It runs great. It's Forza. There was a really cool track set in Japan where you get to drive on this really, really long straightaway. And I was going like 200 miles an hour, and I felt the speed of my car. And that was one of the coolest moments in gaming for me this year. Like, I just thought it was really well done. The lighting and the water textures of the rain and weather effects and everything. Forza's always been great, but I think this is another solid entry in the series.
Right on. I think I'm going to have to go with Forza as well. I just don't know enough about the other games in this category, and I except for Hot Wheels, but I don't think it would win against
The Crew
Forza.
Motorfest looks interesting, and The Crew is one of those things that, like, on paper always intrigued me as a premise of, like, cool, cross-country race, like, Cannonball Run-esque, like, this sounds dope. I've heard okay things, nothing crazy, but, yeah, and these other ones, it is interesting. One thing just to call out, the EA Sports FC, the fact that it's FIFA rebranded to EA Sports FC because they couldn't get the licensing, it still throws me off.
Yeah.
But I'm sure, from what I've heard, another solid entry in that series, albeit without that FIFA license that we know. Next up, we have Best Sim and Strategy Game. Our nominees are Advanced Wars 1+2 Reboot Camp, City Skylines 2, Company of Heroes 3, Fire Emblem Engage, and Pikmin 4.
Now, this feels like a pretty stacked category.
I think this is a pretty stacked category because all of these games are quite good.
Yeah.
The ones I've played, I think, are very, very good.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about all the games in this category.
The one thing I'll call out is I think Pikmin 4 is an incredible game. It's not super strategy-esque. It's like more of like a puzzle platform, light resource management. There's just not...
I could see the pitch, though.
There's a bit of tower defense involved in it. I just, like, compared to, like, Advance Wars compared to Fire Emblem compared to Company of Heroes. Not like, these are designated strategy games.
Puzzle game category.
No.
So
that's
I think
true.
That people kind of this, like, oh, puzzle game. Puzzle is strategy. You know what I mean? Like,
and there's strategy to it of you're sending out your Pikmin, choosing where to go, you're choosing how to. There's definitely management elements to it. Yeah. So I think it's fair to have it in this category. Friend of the show and co-host of Crossplay, Jacob McCourt, I know he's a big fan of Fire Emblem Engage. Yeah. I have a copy of Advance Wars sitting on my shelf behind us right now, and I haven't had a chance to dig in.
Was that Christmas present from last year? Birthday present?
I think it was birthday. But yeah, it's the backlog is huge this year, and it's been one that, you know, I love that series. I love that style of game, and it looks like a solid entry in that one. Though I feel like the reviews were good. Not exceptional.
Yeah, that's fair.
So for me, and then I would also throw out that City Skyline 2 also have heard very good things about, but once again, feels like a iterative sequel in a sense of it's not like lighting the world on fire, but it's a definitely a great version of a solid game. You know what I mean? So then I feel like Company of Heroes is, you know, that's the one not only have I not played, but I don't really follow that game that much other than just like knowing what it is, you know? So
in terms of my knowledge.
Yeah. So personally,
what are you going to give it to? What do you think?
I just adore the heck out of Pikmin 4. And I think it's a really, really good game. And that's one that like, Brian Altano of IGN tweeted today that he wishes Pikmin 4 had been nominated for Game of the Year in place of Mario, because he thinks it's honestly like a better game in a sense that it's so polished, it's incredibly beautiful, it's so fun to play, it's like just the right amount of strategy to it where like you don't have, there's no overthinking that has to happen, it's not stressful, it's very relaxing, and it's just so fun to move your Pikmin around, solve the different puzzles, uncover Nintendo nostalgic relics of the past. You know, I found a Game Boy and a game cartridge and an NES controller and these different like household objects throughout the world. And it's just like, it's really wholesome and fun. And
yeah,
so I think for that, I would give it the nod here. Yeah.
I definitely, this is one of those categories. I hope Pikmin 4 wins. I think it definitely deserves to. For the sake of choosing something else, I'm going to go with Fire Emblem.
I think that's a solid selection. And I think, honestly, I feel like I've heard more folks within the industry talking about Fire Emblem. Like, I feel like when it came out in January, it was on the, like, front of mind for a lot of folks.
It's kind of a numbers game, too, because if more people have played one game and liked it than the other game, even if the people who played the other game loved it, you know, it's a bit of a numbered game.
So. Totally.
In terms of the people who are voting.
Yeah. Next up, we have Best Family. Not Best Family Game, Best Family. For the best family game appropriate for family play, irrespective of genre or platform.
I was going to say, without the description,
we're ranking the families within the video game industry. 100%. Ranking the families.
I feel like we've definitely got some families that are being snubbed in this category.
That is very fair. This is another weird category for me where I feel like essentially this category, it's not best like family co-op. It's not best thing to play as a group.
It's like most colorful.
It's like best not violent game, yeah. I think is what I saw Janet Garcia describing it as on Twitter, which I resonate with that a lot.
Party Animals is like a little violent.
That's true.
Cartoon violence.
That said, let me read these nominees. So we have
TVY7 or whatever the heck.
For sure. So let me read these nominees real quick and then we'll jump into things. So for best family game, we got Disney Illusion Island, we got Party Animals, Pikmin 4, Sonic Superstars, and Super Mario Bros. Wonder.
There's good games in here.
There's some solid games.
I just want to shout out myself from 5 seconds ago, completely forgetting that there are actually ratings for video games.
Yes.
And I did not need to compare it to television.
Yeah, the ESRB is a thing.
This is the best E-rated game category.
Essentially, yeah. So the way I have always interpreted this category is I'm going home at Thanksgiving or Christmas. We got the extended family. Everyone's gathered around the TV. What would be the most fun thing for us to either all play together or like or, you and I are playing or
yeah.
the three people are playing and someone else is hanging out watching? What's the best, like, what's the crowd pleaser, you know?
So So it's a little bit multiplayer, but it's a little bit like just family friendly in general.
Yeah.
But like something that is fun like, to be a part
For example,
of as a
Pikmin
group.
Has the cool Dandori multiplayer mode, but I think you have to have separate Switches to do that. I don't know if you can play it locally. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, but
I think there's a bunch of families that do have like separate Switch lights.
That's true.
So.
That's true. But that said, I do envision like I think Disney Illusion Island is a really great pick here because I think fun gameplay, really charming visuals. You can play with up to four players,
yeah.
And it's very approachable, but it's also engaging enough for someone who's played a Metroidvania before. But I think this is totally one you could hand to like a younger sibling or an older family member.
Yeah.
And I think you'd all have a fun time. And
yeah.
I think everybody can connect on the Disney love.
I really like,
and I think it's a legitimately like a good game.
Yeah,
it's
a
really
game.
Nice
I really like
experience
the characters and the writing and the humor. Like it was funny.
Yeah.
It was really fun to play. So I definitely really liked Disney Illusion Island.
Because I would put that one for me over Mario in this category
too.
Because
yeah.
I think it's a more, it's less frustrating, there'll be way less tension and friction, and it'll just be straight to the approachable fun.
Well, when you're talking about, like, sometimes it's like, look at all the games in this category, which one is the best versus which one fits the description the best. And I think that Mario is just so frustrating to play as a family, like you said.
With a bigger group, yeah. I just think...
Maybe it's, like, on paper, the best game in this category. But I don't think it's the best game for this category.
But yeah, I hear
That's
you.
Fair. I want to put my vote behind Disney Illusion Island. I think Super Mario will probably win, but I would vote for Disney.
I would say, yeah, for me, it's between Disney and Party Animals. Honestly, I think Sonic's not even really in the conversation to me.
Party Animals was fun.
Based on review discussion around Sonic, it's fine at best, and I just don't think it's going to light the world on fire. That said, I'm sure it's fun, but I don't think it holds a candle to some of these other games. I think Party Animals, for that family gathering, for that time, I think if you had a big group playing together, I think it could be very fun. But once again, I just found the game play loop pretty repetitive.
Yeah.
And I think, depending on who you're playing with, it might be more frustrating than super enjoyable.
Yeah.
So
that's fair.
Yeah, so I would go Disney Illusion Island personally.
All right. I guess that's another
we're
one
staying
that we're
on that one.
Yeah.
Locking it in. That's one where that's my prediction, but like maybe I should say Mario even though I don't think it should win, but I just feel
I
like in my conscience
with
it's
Disney
hard.
Disney Illusion Island, and if you want to do something different, you can be the contrarian this time.
I'm going to stick with it and then we'll get spicy here in a bit, I'm
Ooh,
sure.
Spicy.
So next up we have best fighting game. Our nominees are God of Rock, Mortal Kombat 1, Nickelodeon All-Stars Brawl 2.
Totally forgot that game came out this year.
Pocket Bravery. It just came out, like, within the last few weeks. And then Street Fighter 6.
I totally forgot
so,
that it was coming out.
This is an interesting category because I feel like in the last few years, we've been really scraping the... Not to say the nominees have been bad, but it's like, Sifu, that's a fighting game, right? It's like, no, that's not a fighting game. But I feel like this year, these are all, like, established, you know, fighting games. To be honest, I had never heard of God of Rock or Pocket Bravery until these nominees came out, so take that how you will. I wouldn't call myself like crazy dialed into the fighting game community, but I try to be like aware of what's popular and what's happening and what's, you know, being talked about. That said, I feel like obviously for me it comes down to Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter here, and I feel like I've heard equal positive things about both. But I think it's going to go to Street Fighter in this case because I think Street Fighter V had such a tumultuous launch and it just was very content light at the time. And over time, it became this like well-regarded game. But at the time, it really, really wasn't. And I think there's just been so much positivity around Street Fighter VI, everything around the beta period, the preview coverage to launch and since. I think this is just a really, really well-regarded fighting game, and I think it will be one that's positively remembered. I think it'll be a staple of Evo and fighting game tournaments, and we'll always be talking about that. That said, I have heard a lot of positive buzz about Mortal Kombat 1, but I'm gonna go Street Fighter personally.
Nice, locking it in.
Yeah, what do you think?
I am going Mortal Kombat 1 because I've heard a lot of positive things again about both, but I feel like I've heard more positive things about Mortal Kombat 1, and there's been all that. I mean, there was that big hype push when they were adding characters.
They just added Omni-Man yeah. for Invincible Season 2, which is really dope.
And, I mean, they had, like, all those trailers. I feel like they were doing, like, a really big media push. And then I heard, like, so many positive things about it when it came out. People really like it. I will not ever like this game. Too violent. However, I've heard a lot of positive things. So I'm gonna expect that that would win.
Right on. That's awesome. Next up, we have Best RPG. Our nominees are Baldur's Gate 3, mm-hmm. Final Fantasy 16, Lies of P, Sea of Stars, and Starfield.
That's a stacked category right there.
It is a stacked category. The one I want to call out as, I would say, interesting choice here is Final Fantasy 16.
Yeah.
Whereas, historically, obviously, Final Fantasy is a role-playing series. Right. But I think 16 is the furthest they've gone from a role-playing game, and it really, in a lot of ways,
more
feels
of a
like
story or
mostly an action game with some RPG elements in there. And so I think, for me, it's a slam dunk that this is going to Baldur's Gate. I don't even think there's much competition.
Yeah.
I think Lies of P is awesome, but I just don't think it's in the same realm of, like, we're talking about role-playing experience, and I think Baldur's Gate is, like, the epitome of that. Wonderful reception for Sea of Stars. That's one that's on my backlog to try to get to over the holidays. Friend of the show, Joseph Hooper, really enjoyed it. It looks stunning. It looks really beautiful. It looks like that wonderful homage to the SNES, like, Chrono Trigger era of RPGs. So gotta give that a shout-out, and I'd love to hear what your thoughts are in this category, because I think between the two of us, I know you've put the most time into Starfield.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah, so what are you thinking currently?
I definitely think from everything I've heard about Baldur's Gate that people are just way more positive on it. And I know that there's, of course, a bunch of people played Starfield and there's been a ton of buzz. But at the end of the day, it did have a fair bit of problems. And I think that a lot of people were turned off by, you know, and we've talked, you and I, about, you know, the kind of massiveness of the game and how it kind of detracts from the minute-to-minute experience.
With the number of planets and how it feels like
compared
a
to
little
like,
bit recycled, and you're visiting very similar places after a certain point. It doesn't feel like as curated as I want it to be.
Yeah, something that I feel that I know a lot of other people feel too is that the cities and the hubs that are supposed to be like the main points feel a little bit underdone, and it feels like they could have put a little bit more time and intentionality into those spaces and not worried as much about, you know, making the game impossible to beat or whatever, you know what I mean, impossible to see everything in, and the like procedural generation of the planet so you can't actually see everything there is to see. I think that that attitude sort of hurt them a little bit with the, once again, the minute-to-minute experience with them playing the game. So yeah, I just think that people are way more positive about Baldur's Gate.
Baldur's Gate is one that,
and
like,
more polished, I think.
On paper, it is not my type of game. I'm not historically into fantasy settings. D&D is not something I've really dabbled with. But friends and colleagues are so positive on this game that I absolutely have to check it out before Game of the Year conversations, just to have a sense of it now that it's on PlayStation. I'm definitely going to check it out in the coming weeks, but the fact that it's like lit the world on fire, like, since that game came out in full
and it
full
kind of
release,
did
like
take everyone
everyone
by
is
surprise,
playing it, everyone's talking about it.
Yeah,
folks that I wouldn't normally like associate with that level of RPG are obsessed, like the character creator alone. I've watched a ton of streams of it, so I feel like very familiar with what the game is, and I think it's really, really striking. And how in a world where we're critiquing Starfield for not feeling as open-ended and approachable as we want it to be, Baldur's Gate 3 is this like crazy sandbox in a sense where you can really make your own adventure, and I think that's really powerful and really cool. So yeah, I think slam dunk, it's Baldur's Gate.
I definitely think so. And like, at the end of the day, I really enjoyed my time with Starfield, and I'm going to keep playing it for a very long time to come. And I love this game. But when we're talking about, like, best in show or whatever and giving out awards, I think that it does, you know, you can't just ignore the problems just because you love something. So that's what I'm saying.
Well,
I love Starfield.
And to that, like, I love Lies of P. Like, I think that's a fantastic game. It's interesting now that I've launched crossplay with Jacob and Joseph, because I feel like there are a ton of games that, like, I haven't talked about on this podcast that I've really enjoyed throughout this year.
Yeah.
But that's one that I had a great time with. I haven't finished yet, and it's on my radar to get to playing Alan Wake right now and then trying to double back for some different things.
Yeah.
But that's another one that I don't necessarily, I almost feel like it's more of an action game with RPG elements in a way than
yeah.
it is like a true, and not that every
right.
winner of this category has to be a true RPG, but I think when you have a game like Baldur's Gate that like
that
represents the category
RPG
so well, you have to give it its due here.
Yeah, definitely.
Next up, we have Best Action Adventure Game. The nominees are
category.
Alan Wake 2, Spider-Man 2, Resident Evil 4, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, and The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Fantastic.
This is a tough category
yeah,
because these are all like different games in a way of like
right.
how they approach design and what kind of elements they bring to the table. So just to throw out the description that the Game Awards provides, for the best action-adventure game combining combat with traversal and puzzle solving. So as soon as you throw in the word traversal, for
right.
me, it's hard to not immediately give an award to Spider-Man 2, just because I think they did some amazing things with that game, with the traversal, with the wingsuit, with the gameplay and the mobility of that game. The pacing is so impeccable, going between main missions and side quests and collectibles and different activities as you're moving through the world. And it's like just the right amount of like thought needed.
Yeah.
In order for it to just be like super easy to pick up a controller, jump in and start having fun and just stay engaged moment to moment for the entire experience.
Yeah.
But I could almost make an argument for each of these. Like,
right. Yeah.
If I was going to go through
that.
The whole list, like The Legend of Zelda, really fantastic traversal in a sense that you can build and craft all
right.
these different objects to move about the world, and they like essentially like encourage you to break the game in a sense
right.
that like the world is your oyster in terms of creativity, and there's just really no limit to how you interact with the world around you, and the physics engine is just nuts.
Yeah.
Like it's so nuts. So,
and it's definitely a very puzzle solving heavy game as well with the shrines. But,
sure,
but you know you
but
could
there's
maybe
a
argue
million solutions to each of them, which
yeah.
I think is a really compelling reason for it to win here.
And you could almost argue that you know it does those two things better than it does combat. But then
I would agree with that. I think in terms of like just to loop in Starfield for this conversation, for an example of like in a game where I desperately wanted to feel the sense of exploration, Tears of the Kingdom like is that in spades and has that sense of adventure and has that sense of mobility through the world.
Yeah, but exploration isn't one of the things.
Yes, but I would say like traversal. In a sense,
sure.
is exploration in a way, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
And then I think Spider-Man is the same, or the opposite. Like, I think the combat is really solid in Spider-Man, but maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a little bit lighter on the puzzle-solving side of things.
Yes, in terms of, like, you're completing, like, these science puzzle things to do side objectives and different things, but they're more, like, fun and quick.
Yeah.
Lighthearted things and less like in Legend of Zelda you have like actual obstacles in front of you that you have to get really creative. And
yeah.
I think the fact that those puzzles are so open-ended gives that the edge. I think I'm leaning Zelda for this one personally.
Interesting. Okay.
That said though, we haven't even talked about Alan Wake.
Or
we haven't
Resident
talked
Evil.
About Resident Evil. We haven't talked
Star
about Star Wars.
Wars.
All of those games are awesome.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely adoring Alan Wake. I think it's in the running for my top three at this point. I don't know quite where things are going to fall, but I absolutely adore that game. But when I think traversal and puzzle solving, I don't really think Alan Wake. For
yeah.
me, that game really shines with its narrative, with its art direction,
right.
with its like music and visual presentation and like overall package.
Well, and you've also talked about the puzzle solving in Alan Wake 2 being a little bit less about the actual puzzles themselves and more about what you're learning and
it's
the experience.
It's a narrative vehicle. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Ultimately, I think Janet Garcia mentioned this on PS I Love You, but she said that the puzzles are like just enough to make you feel smart, just enough to make you feel like you're doing something, but not so much that you're really ever going to get, like, stuck on them, which I would agree with. Resident Evil 4, I think, has exceptional puzzles. I think the series is really, since 2 Remake, has always been stellar in that regard. But once again, when you throw in that element of the three pillars of puzzle solving, combat, and traversal, it's really hard to argue against Zelda, I think.
Interesting. And then, of course, we have Jedi Survivor, which you played.
Did I actually haven't played that one.
That was another birthday present.
There were two games I received for my birthday, and I'm still on the backlog train with both of them, so take that how you will. There have been a lot of games this year, though. It's been freaking crazy.
I mean, I've heard really positive things about all of these games, whether from you or from other people. I know that you're giving it to Zelda. I'm giving it to Spider-Man.
You're going Spider-Man.
I'm going Spider-Man in this category. I think that that makes a lot of sense. I think that when I think about action, adventure games, we just talked about the three pillars. It does feel like the puzzle-solving pillar is a little bit shorter than the other two in general in that category, because I feel like action-adventure games are more about the traversal and they are more about the combat, and I think Spider-Man just fits all of that better, in my opinion.
I think that's fair.
Can't argue if traversal is one of the things. I don't think you can argue to beat Spider-Man.
I would agree with that. Spider-Man's great.
If it was best traversal.
For sure. Next up, we have Best Action Game. So our nominees are action, not adventure. So we're clarifying here. So our nominees are Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon, Dead Island 2, Ghost Runner 2, Hi-Fi Rush, and Remnant 2.
So once again, the action / adventure versus action category is just, it's funny. It's funny, everybody. We can't argue with it.
I mean, I see the point, though. Like, this is specifically on gameplay, on combat, on, like, that competitive aspect. Hi-Fi Rush is an interesting one here. I adore that game, and I'm so glad that it is nominated in several categories. I haven't actually played any of these games except for Hi-Fi Rush.
Yeah.
That said, I think this might be where Armored Core takes it, because that's one that has been on my radar that I wanted to play, but it came out like right before PAX, and then when we got back from PAX, Starfield was out, so it was like this weird in-between limbo where I couldn't get to it, but it looks so cool. Talk about a game that just looks so stylish and awesome. Similar thoughts about Ghost Runner. Visually, they're just both so dope. It's like, let's play video games and let's do cool shit with robots and fight stuff and make explosions happen. And like, especially with Armored Core, like, I think back as a kid how I was obsessed with Robotech, the anime, and like, this looks like that game. Like, I'm playing that, and this is like the game I dreamt of as a kid. So and I think the FromSoft staple, I think, got a lot of folks into this one this year after coming off of Elden Ring. So I think this is one that folks who, like me, who didn't dabble in Armored Core 1 through 5, I think jumped into this one and then fell in love. The customization suite looks dope. The visuals behind it look awesome. Like, I think it's going to be Armored Core is my prediction. That said, though, Hi-Fi Rush, incredible game, but I think FromSoft just knows how to do combat, and that's like their bread and butter. So I have a feeling that's what's going to take it for this one.
That makes sense to me, too, I think.
Dead Island is a weird one that nominated here, because I don't feel like it reviewed incredibly well.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. So that was an interesting one to see. And I have heard really good things about Remnant 2. I think it just refined what...
A lot of twos in that category.
A lot of twos. Hi-Fi Rush 2 is a game I hope you see the light of one day.
Maybe it's foreshadowing.
All right, we're going with Armored Core.
Nice.
There's a lot of categories left. Next up, we have Best VR AR Game. Our nominees are Gran Turismo 7, Humanity, Horizon Call of the Mountain, Resident Evil Village VR Mode, and Synapsis. Or Synapse? Synapse.
I don't know. I only see one S, so...
Yeah, there's only one Synapse. S, so Synapse.
No, it's not plural.
Yeah. That's the only one on the list I'm not familiar at all with. The rest of the games I either know of or I have played. But what do you think here? What's your initial takeaway?
I mean, we don't have VR, so this is all all hearsay at this point.
Sure. I think based on like Scuttlebutt, I would say Horizon is a front runner for this one, because I think that was like the main reason people wanted a PSVR 2 was to play Horizon Call of the Mountain. It looks very cool. It made me consider spending the money to get a PSVR 2, but I just couldn't justify the price.
Yeah.
I've played Humanity not in VR, and that game is awesome. Yeah. And I think it would be very cool in VR, so I think that would be an interesting choice. Want to give a quick shout out to friend of the show, Alex Van Aken. He and Blake Hester over at Game Informer released a really cool documentary all about the making of Humanity.
Ooh,
so
cool.
Folks should go check out that over on Game Informer. But yeah, I think my prediction would be Horizon.
Yeah.
I think Resident Evil is cool. I'm sure it plays well. Kind of a known quantity, similar with Gran Turismo.
Yeah.
And then, to be honest, I'm just not familiar with Synapse.
Right.
So I would go Horizon.
Gran Turismo, you know, you see people with the, like, really epic setups. We saw a couple of really epic setups at PAX West, too, where they had, like, a wraparound computer screen that went, like, 180 degrees around your face. And they were in a chair that was shaped like a, you know, driver's seat of a car, they got the pedals, you know. If you have that level of setup, like, that's nuts. That can be really
immersive, yeah.
Obviously, you wouldn't need the wraparound screen if you're in VR. But anyway, when you have all the, like, extra stuff, that can be really, really cool. But yeah, I think it's going to be Horizon 2.
For sure. Next up, we have Best Mobile Game. Our nominees are Final Fantasy VII, Ever Crisis, Honkai Star Rail, Hello Kitty, Island Adventure, Monster Hunter Now, and Terra Nil.
I mean, I think it's a slam dunk, Monster Hunter Now.
Really?
Yeah.
I have heard some pretty positive buzz about that one as far as how Niantic's Pokemon Go spinoffs games go. I've also heard really good things about Honkai Star Rail, but I don't know if that's necessarily the mobile version to play, because I believe there's console versions of that game that are separate.
I
have heard really good things about the narrative within Final Fantasy Ever Crisis, so I could see it going there.
That's fair.
And Terra Nil, which you reviewed, is really dope, but once again, I don't know if I'd want to play it on a mobile platform. I feel like I'd want to play it on PC, personally.
And I played it on our laptop, and it was getting hot.
Yeah.
So I don't imagine doing it on a phone would really do it justice. I just think it would feel weird. Honestly.
And then Hello Kitty feels like a weird one.
Yeah.
I know nothing about that game, but it seems funny to be here. I think
if the category was best game that is on mobile, I would probably give it to Final Fantasy or Terra Nil. But I think Monster Hunter.
For like a specific to mobile what it experience. Is, yeah. I'm going to give it to Final Fantasy, the prediction to Final Fantasy, just because I think there is that name recognition. I do think a lot of folks played it, because I do think they made the story tie into future Final Fantasy VII related things in interesting ways. So I think people wanted to get the full picture and checked out this game. So I'm going to give that the nod.
Nice.
This round. All right. We got some slam dunks here happening. Next up, we have Best Debut Indie.
Ooh.
The one we've all been waiting for. Our nominees are... when I say we, I mean literally us. Yeah. Our nominees are Cocoon, Dredge, Pizza Tower, Venba, and Viewfinder. So really excited about all of these.
Yeah.
Pizza Tower is one that I have not played, but I've watched a lot of streams similar to Viewfinder. I absolutely love Cocoon, I love Dredge, and I love Venba. So those are like, these are all really, really solid games. And considering these are the first projects being released from these studios, I think you also have to give it up just in terms of like the quality bar here.
Yeah.
Why don't you kick us off, Claire? What do you think is going to be the winner? And I know you have a couple of these that you're trying to get to before our Game of the Year coverage. Yes. In the next few weeks while you have some time off, but
I'm not
top level, what are you thinking?
I'm not like deeply familiar with Pizza Tower, but the other games in this category, while not having played them myself, am quite familiar with in terms of like
you follow the coverage, maybe you played a demo here or there.
Watching people demos and stuff. So I definitely think that, like you said, these are all really, really solid. I think that they're each doing something that's new and interesting and fun, and you've played them and just gushed about like the gameplay in Dredge and Cocoon just feeling really, really cool. I've always thought that the puzzles in Viewfinder looked like really interesting, and I'm excited to check that one out too. I do think that of all these, Cocoon is, it seems, polished, beautiful, well-made, and just and innovative, and, like, doing all of those things at the same time. And yeah. I think that's a really special thing to get from a debut indie game, that it's trying something new and is polished. A lot of debuts, I feel like people are kind of just retreading what other people have done, making new versions of previously existing games, or as they're trying something new but it's not super polished. And I feel like the fact that this hits on both of those is
a win. I love Cocoon. I think it's phenomenal. It's definitely going to be on my top 10 of the year. We did a review over on Crossplay of that one. I just had a blast with it. Its puzzle design is so approachable but so brilliant in its execution. I think the sound design is amazing. I think the art direction is really striking. It's not terribly long, which I think it's just like a 4-hour experience that's like so memorable and so cool and so striking, and it's one that I feel like I'll be talking about for years to come because I think the game design is that good, and I think folks will look at it years to come for how do you introduce new abilities in a game? What's like the pacing structure that you should approach a game? And I think this is just like gold standard, amazing puzzle design from an experienced team, but albeit a new team working all together on this project. I do want to give a shout out to Vemba.
Yeah.
Because I think there's some amazing representation things that it does. Incredible music, art direction, and it made me want to eat all of the food I was making in the game. Very emotional story that resonated with a lot of folks and let me experience a culture that I didn't grow up in and I'm not familiar with, and it was really cool to see that Indian immigrant story being told in this interactive medium that I don't think this is why we need video games and this is why we need these narrative experiences. So I think that game's a really powerful one. I'd be stoked to see any of these games win in a sense, because I think they're all deserving, but I think Cocoon was my favorite, but I also hope to see Vemba take it. I think Vemba is my, like, I want this to win because I think it would mean a lot to the team. I think it would mean a lot in terms of the importance. I think it would have, like, a broad message to the industry if this game won. But I think it'll probably be Cocoon is my prediction.
Right on.
I also think a lot of folks had this one on their radar. That said, though, if you haven't played Cocoon or Vemba, they're both available on Game Pass. So highly, highly recommend them there. And we've talked a lot about Dredge, so I won't beat the drum on Dredge, but Dredge is also fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like, these are all really, really good games, but go in Cocoon for this one. And you said that as well, right?
I did, okay. Yes.
Cool. So then next up, we have Best Independent Game. Here's where I want to, after I read the nominees, I want to open up the floor and have a kind of a bit of a discussion about what we think the difference between an independent studio and an indie, and, like, those terms. So I want to discuss how we're feeling about those terms, because I think they come into play here in an interesting way.
Yeah.
So we have, our nominees are Cocoon, Dave the Diver, Dredge, Sea of Stars, and Viewfinder. So the interesting thing that has kind of been lighting the internet on fire the last day, I want to read the description of this award category from the Game Awards to give some context. For outstanding creative and technical achievement in a game made outside the traditional publisher system. So essentially, there has been a lot of discussion about whether or not the studio Mint Rocket behind Dave the Diver is an independent studio.
Right.
And they're technically not, because they're owned by, I'll Google it real quick, but I believe it's called Nexon is the company. But okay. Yeah, I just confirmed it was Nexon. So anyway, we get into this interesting conversation of what makes an indie game an indie, what makes an independent studio an independent studio, because we have kind of a range of things on this team or on this nomination list where we have small teams making projects, we have small teams with large publisher backing from them. large companies, we have, you know, things like Sea of Stars was day one on PlayStation Plus and Game Pass.
Right.
Dredge was supported by Team 17, which is an established indie publisher. We have Annapurna, and Thunderful. Like, these are all household names in a sense of the indie game space.
And you know, we just had this little aside where you were looking up Mint Rocket, owned by
Nexon. And their net worth is in the billions.
In the double-digit billions.
Right, and that's not to say that, like, Dave the Diver had billions of dollars of funding, but there's something inherently different about a Mint Rocket and their backing and risk and investment and, like, resources available to them compared to some of these other studios that we're talking about. And so I think there's been kind of an industry conversation about whether or not essentially Dave the Diver is considered an indie game, because in the traditional sense, it's not an indie game. And it's interesting too, because the idea of a game made outside the traditional publishing system, it kind of feels like it wasn't in a sense, but then we get into this can of worms where I think a good example folks have been bringing up is Pentiment, developed by Obsidian Entertainment, and how that really isn't considered an indie game in a sense that it's made by a AAA studio with Microsoft funding.
Right.
But it just happens to be made by a team of about 10 people.
Right.
So, like...
And is it just, like, based on vibes?
Right.
To an extent. So, this feels like an indie game.
Right. And I know, like, Greg Miller made the point on Twitter yesterday that I thought was pretty prudent to this conversation, that if Naughty Dog had a team of 10 people make a 2D side-scroller, we wouldn't call that game an indie just because it visually looks like an indie game. So
and it was
I think,
a small team.
Yeah, so where do you fall on this issue? Because I'm one of two minds here with this in a certain extent, because I think at a surface level, you look at the pixel art side-scrolling nature of Dave the Diver, and you're like, yeah, it's an indie game. But when you look, kind of drill down on it and look at their publishing resources and how they kind of almost more fall in that, like, second party publishing realm.
I think it's just, it's too vague. I think that you get people, or you get games where they're made by a small team of people. You have games where they were made with a very limited budget. You have games that just have indie vibes. Games that were made by, maybe it was like 20 people, but they're all they got, and they didn't have any backing, and they didn't have any, you know, like, they're raising their own money or whatever.
Sure.
So I just feel like there are so many different variables, and I almost feel like, to a certain extent, each game kind of goes through its own journey. And then when you also get to the point where we are now, where we're deciding which of these is the best, and it comes down to who is played these games, how many people have played the games, and it is a question of, well, these ones are available on Game Pass, that's gonna make a huge difference, people just play for free. This one is, you know, it becomes a whole issue. So I just think if we're really gonna mince it like that, like, it's just, it becomes a little bit convoluted.
Well, that's why it feels overly convoluted and in an unnecessary way to have indie game versus independent game versus indie debut. Like, it just feels like
indie debut is easier.
Indie debut makes sense, but
it's their first game,
right? But is it considered an indie if they have the financial backing and resources that Mint Rocket had? Like, I know that Dave the Diver isn't their first game, but that said,
also, is it considered a debut if, like, it's a new studio but half of the studio came from an old studio?
Well, I think in that case it kind of has to be, because everyone has experience to some extent, whether they were making, you know, college projects in their dorm for school or what have you. Like, everyone brings their own talent. So I don't knock that against anybody, but I do think, like, when a new team comes together, it deserves to be celebrated. Yeah. But I guess I just meant that, like, we have all these different categories to celebrate indie and independent games, but there is a very, like, kind of what gray area of, like, what is what.
I almost feel like at a certain point, it must, especially with, like, I mean, you've had conversations on crossplay about, like, the, like, monopoly the monopolies, like, situation that's going on. And, like, at one point, is it just like this category is just games that were not made by or by a subsidiary of
the big
Microsoft
three.
PlayStation, Sony, Nintendo?
I think it's interesting too within the lens dialing it back to this best independent game category, because for me, Dave the Diver wouldn't be my prediction anyway. Like, I think Cocoon is the superior game in this category. So the definition kind of doesn't matter in that sense for the sake of my prediction, but I do think it matters in a sense that, like, I think the category is unnecessarily vague.
Yeah.
And I think there are a few categories like that where it's like, who are we?
If the point is to be inclusive of people who had not a lot of resources and not a lot of support, then games getting nominated that did have a lot of resources and support takes away the attention from the smaller projects. I get that. I love games that are smaller projects. My favorite games are rarely included in most of these categories. So I definitely get the frustration on that end as well.
Yeah, totally.
But I also agree that, I mean, I've heard positive buzz about Dave the Diver, but...
It's great. It's really,
I've heard way more positive buzz about Cocoon, and I've heard way more positive buzz about Sea of Stars, so I'm going to be contrarian, and I'm going to say Sea of Stars for this category, because I want to have different choices sometimes, just to shake it up.
Sure.
Yeah. And sometimes the debut indie wins... both categories.
Sure.
But sometimes I think they like to shake it up and give it to another guy, give it to another person.
Yeah, I just think ultimately in terms of these predictions, like, no one, when they're casting their votes, are getting that nitty gritty about it. They're just picking what they want to win, and most of the time the mainstream pick is what is right taking answer. It.
I know, I've heard a lot of people be really hyped about Sea of Stars.
Yeah, so no, me too. I think it looks awesome. It's on my next to play pile, if you will. So next up, we have best community support. This is another odd one and it's something I hope Jeff and team address at the Game Awards, but man, has this year been incredible for video games, but also sucked for devs and for the industry at large, with over 6,000 plus layoffs. And I think the irony here is we'll see in this category studios being highlighted that suffered major layoffs,
and did days before
receiving major awards and accolades for their work. So,
well, and let's just, I mean, let's just...
Let me read the nominees, and then we'll get into names. So the nominees are Baldur's Gate, Cyberpunk 2077, Destiny 2, Final Fantasy 14, and No Man's Sky. So a lot of returning faces, and then Baldur's Gate being the new... inclusion for this year with their full release.
So let's name names. Your dev team is part of the community, and Bungie, really not cool. Laid off all the people, no notice, no time to get their shit together.
Shout out though to Liana Rupert and team formerly of Bungie, because they're going to the Game Awards to celebrate. Anyway, and celebrate their work. Yeah. And I saw that and I was like, fuck yeah. Well deserved. Heck yeah. And the fact that they're nominated here just shows the incredible work that they were doing. And it's still wild to me that a game that is financially successful and is doing as well as Destiny 2 is insane to see these layoffs. So that was a huge, huge bummer. I almost want them to win the award just for that, but I don't know if that'll be the case. I think Cyberpunk is a really interesting one here, because really I think they've had, similar to No Man's Sky, who has won this award in past years. And Cyberpunk is also nominated an ongoing game, so I almost think that makes more sense. But it's been really cool to see positive buzz around that game, and I think that game finally be what folks were hoping it was back in 2023. So that's really dope. And that said, Baldur's Gate, I think they've had incredible community support, you know, with their different alpha and beta test periods and then their full launch. I think they've been, Larian and team has been very dialed in about what was going well with the game and what they needed to fix, and listening to fan feedback and being very responsive and transparent about what was going on. So, which I think is the case with all of these games, but I think for me, the front runners are Cyberpunk, Destiny, and Baldur's Gate, and I kind of lean Destiny or Baldur's Gate. What are you thinking?
I actually disagree. I think that all the things you were saying about Cyberpunk are super true. I think that they've really turned it around, and they could have just abandoned it.
Yeah,
but they didn't. 100%. They were committed to giving people the game.
Some would have argued that they needed to just cut their losses at a certain point.
And then, you know, No Man's Sky, what was Starfield coming out and all, people have been saying, you know, hey, you're having all these frustrations with Starfield. That's not going to be a problem in No Man's Sky. No Man's Sky does all these things better than Starfield does. And so I think that that game, and I know it's won the award in the past, has turned it around in a big way. And they just continue to provide that support. And I think that that's really important, too. I think that the fact that, you know, Baldur's Gate came out this year, it almost feels like, you know, community support, they haven't really stood the test of time yet. But Cyberpunk and No Man's Sky, they have. Those teams have continued to work. I know that ongoing is a separate category, but it does feel like that is, you know, a strong sign of support that, you know, so far after launch, they're still doing these things. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think it's, for me, between those two, between Cyberpunk and No Man's Sky.
Okay. I'm locking in Bungie with Destiny 2. What are you going to do?
I'm going to do Cyberpunk just because No Man's Sky has won the award in the past.
But to your point, it does speak to the overall quality that they're continuing
to be nominated.
They're still relevant and they're still doing that work.
I think that CD Projekt Red has had the turnaround that No Man's Sky had like 2 years ago when they were nominated. They were nominated 2 years ago for this category for the first time, or last year for the first time? No Man's Sky with the Hello Games.
Oh, they've been nominated like for a while. Every year since like 2019, I want to say. Yeah. Like it's been several years.
Man, time fucking flies. Anyway.
Don't quote me on that, but multiple years. Luke, for sure. Lewis, last two
no
or three.
No Man's Sky.
At least since 2020, I
want
to say.
It's been definitely. Anyway,
for the next category, though, I want to immediately... So this is Best Ongoing Game. Our nominees are Apex Legends, Cyberpunk 2077, Final Fantasy XIV, Fortnite, and Genshin Impact. I want to immediately lock in Cyberpunk, because I think ongoing here is the key that, like, they continued since launch, the train wreck that was launch, continually supporting the game, and now up with their Phantom Liberty DLC and the 2.0 launch. Like, I've heard so many positive things about this that I do have it downloaded, ready to jump in after I finish up Alan Wake, and I think that speaks to the quality of the work that the team has done. And the fact that the fans that were fans day one have continued to be fans and been a part of that growth and seen it go on and on. And I just think this is their redemption year. And I think this is their time to win this award. And I think this award makes the most sense to me for them to take.
Definitely. I think it's going to be Fortnite again. like to shout out a game that is not included on this list.
Sure.
But that as of today... has a new update that I am very excited to play, even though it is not in our Talk 3 Game of the Year. And that is Slime Rancher 2, which has had two free updates.
The first
one was a banger. The game itself was already a banger to begin with. I'm assuming that this one is also going to be a banger. Way to go. Way to go, Monami Park.
Awesome. Yeah, great shout out. To your point, too, Fortnite has had a great year. I continue to play it. I continue to love it.
The no build mode, the whatever the heck event they just had where everyone was blowing up about it.
It was cool. It kind of took everything back to the square one in a sense, and it was kind of cool to see. Yeah, always cool collabs. Speaking of which, they're doing a collab with the Game Awards. Like, they have, like, Fortnite Jeff Keighley.
That feels like a conflict of interest.
I mean, sponsors are sponsors.
At the winner of every category is Fortnite. Watch Jeff Keighley do the little dance.
As long as it's not best ongoing game sponsored by Fortnite, I think we're okay. But that said, next category we have Games for Impact.
Mm-hmm.
The nominees are A Space for the Unbound, Chance of Sonar, Goodbye Volcano High, Chia, Terra Nil, and Vemba. This is a pretty stacked category in a sense, too. And I feel like a broken record in a sense, but this is another category that I feel like it's just vague. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It feels a little bit too vague, and I'm not saying that these games don't deserve to be recognized, because I think they do. I just struggle with the fact that there's not a clear definition for, like, the criteria with which we're picking a winner here. So the description provided by the Game Awards is for a thought-provoking game with a pro-social meaning or message. So I think all of these games achieve that in various regards.
In very different ways.
And that's the thing, is, like, for example, like, I really loved Chia earlier this year. I thought it did some really cool representation for Pacific Islander culture, some really just cool things for LGBT representation, similar comments for Goodbye Volcano High. It does really awesome things for LGBT representation, as well as like conversations about mental health.
Yeah.
And Vemba, I already touched on, but really wonderful representation and a look into a culture that for a lot of folks, either it hit close to home or it was that original experience learning something new about a different culture, which I think is really special. Space for the Unbound has been on my radar for a long time. That game looks really dope. And then I know you adored Terranil.
I've heard really good things
about A Chance of Sennar. I've heard that's more of like a puzzle game in design. So that's interesting to see it nominated here. But
a
stacked slate. I think for me, I would go Vemba with this one. I think it's the most important game in a sense.
Yeah.
And once again, I think this would be a great spot to have it kind of represent, like, celebrate this game and hopefully encourage others to
do it. Yeah. I think that it is a testament to the good things that are happening in the industry and with, you know, different developers that I feel like every year there's more and more games in this category that are really solid, and there's more and more games that could have been nominated for this category, but
I feel like it used to be a smaller category.
It used
too.
To be like, like half of these games belong here, and the other half is a bit of a stretch. So I feel like nowadays that there are games out there in spades that are talking about mental health. They're talking about various aspects of the human experience, whether it's, you know, representing different cultures or LGBTQ representation. I think that, I'm not saying every game has all of these things. I just think that, you know, there's more each year, and that's a positive thing. There's also been a lot more games, I feel like, in the past couple years, really focused on environmental issues. This year felt like a lot of games focused on environmental issues. And I thought that the way that Terranil handled that was really exceptional. I think that, you know, we have had tons of city builder games, and then you have like gardening sims where you're, you know, claiming the wilds and like taming the plants and growing things and whatever, and Terranil just turns all of that on its head, where like the point is to take a barren wasteland that has been destroyed by, I mean, assumed human activity, and you're gonna go in there and you're going to help restore nature to the way that it was before, and then you're gonna get the heck out of there. So the end goal is no human involvement. Humans are not there at all. And I think that that's a really powerful message. And then the way that it illustrates that between the graphics and the music is all really special. The fact that the, you know, the music gets more, you know, thicker in texture and more beautiful the more you restore the land, just how satisfying it feels when those tiles turn over as you add more greenery, watching the wildlife return, you know, researching the wildlife to get the animals to spawn in different locations. It's really therapeutic, and also it's really like fun. The puzzle solving elements are really fun on top of the really positive message. So I'm definitely going to give it to Terranil.
That's awesome.
It's what I've been looking forward to. And thought it was doing something, I think, really powerful for a long time, and I still think that, so.
Heck yeah. No, that's a great pick, and I think it's particularly relevant with right all now, the environmental issues happening in the world, too.
Yeah, and it's just, it's really cathartic to play a game where you are restoring, because for most of us, there's not a lot that we can do. You know, the pollution and the ravaging of the wilderness and stuff, that's completely outside of most of our control.
Yeah, so there's like a catharsis to that gameplay loop. That's awesome.
Yes, definitely.
Next up, we have innovation and accessibility, recognizing software and or hardware that is pushing the medium forward by adding features, technology, and content to help games be played and enjoyed by an even wider audience. The nominees are Diablo 4, Forza Motorsport, Hi-Fi Rush, Marvel Spider-Man 2, Mortal Kombat 1, and Street Fighter 6, rounding it out.
Nice.
I think for this one, I'm going to go Spider-Man. I think PlayStation has made a really active effort to have accessibility be a key feature in their big first-party titles, and I think Spider-Man is no different. Adding options, there's lots of different setting tweaks and things you can do to adjust the gameplay experience, so I want to give it to them.
That's awesome.
How about for you?
I'm going to give it to Forza Motorsport.
It's another one I've heard.
Because I've heard the
positive
audio,
steps in there. Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, I always dabble with these features, but I don't always see, like, the full breadth of what's available. But I know Steve Saylor spoke pretty favorably about Forza as well.
Yeah.
To be honest, other than that, I'm not super familiar with the other options in these other games. I don't remember there being a crazy amount of options in Hi-Fi Rush, though mostly I always just check for subtitles and, you know, different font sizes and things like that. So that's usually my main shtick. But I know that there were visual enhancements and audio things you could do with Spider-Man. So that's why I think it's worth shouting out. And
yeah,
it was a very intentional move on their part with the development of that one. Next up, we have Best Performance. The nominees are Ben Starr from Final Fantasy 16, Cameron Monaghan from Star Wars Jedi Survivor, Idris Elba from Cyberpunk 2077 Phantom Liberty, Melanie Libbard from Alan Wake 2, Neil Newbon from Baldur's Gate 3, and Yuri Lowenthal from Marvel's Spider-Man 2.
Nice. I think that there are a couple, feels like there's a couple people missing from this list.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked that Yuri was nominated, but Najee, who voices Miles Morales, wasn't also nominated, because I think he was as good as Yuri, if not better, in some parts of the story for me. But I think there are some solid nominees here. Yeah. I think Ben Starr does do an incredible job, and to be honest, his performance is one of my favorite parts of Final Fantasy VII, or 16.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also just a really nice dude. He was on the Trophy Room podcast. He was on Kind of Funny, Friends Per Second. Like, he's just a really, like, nice, personable dude. So part of me would love to see him win it. I also think Melanie Libbard in
Alan Wake 2,
she does a really stellar job. From what I've seen, Idris does a really stellar job. He and I are on a first name basis.
Mr. Elba.
And Cameron Monaghan, once again, from what I've seen, he was wonderful in the first game, so I imagine he brings it home in the second game as well. But yeah, what do you think? Who sticks out to you in this one?
I mean, everyone you just said, for the reasons that you all just said.
I meant, in terms of your prediction.
They've really been hyping up Idris Elba on Cyberpunk. And he was
it's always a big part of the new update. To have a new celebrity.
But sometimes it can be hit or miss when you have stage and screen actors.
Does it translate?
As a video
Does
game
the presence
character? Yeah. And I don't know because I haven't played it. From what I've seen and heard, Melanie Liebert,
she's really great, incredible.
Yeah.
And just the technology behind that game with the facial capture and everything,
yeah,
like, it's really impressive.
I'm sure that Yuri Lowenthal in Spider-Man 2
crushes it as always,
first game. I haven't watched you play in much, if any, of the second one, though, so I don't know.
I was playing in the wee hours while you were asleep with
I'm
that
gonna
one.
I'm going to go Melanie Lieber's Alan Wake 2.
Very nice.
For my guess. What do you think you're going
to... I think I'm going to go Ben Starr, because I think he has an element of internet popularity behind him, and I think he's kind of established a pretty substantial online presence.
Yeah.
So I think for me,
that could make a big difference.
And I think his performance is really, really good. And I do think it is a standout for me in that game. I think he's really talented. So I'm going to give it to Ben Starr.
Nice.
That's my prediction. But honestly, all of these folks are stellar, and I think it would be justified. Next up, this one is incredibly stacked. Strap in. Best audio design. The nominees are Alan Wake 2, Dead Space, Hi-Fi Rush, Marvel Spider-Man 2, and Resident Evil 4. I have played all of these. I have loved all of these.
Mm-hmm.
I think they all have exceptional sound design. It's very tough.
Yeah.
It's very, very tough, because I think you could make the argument for all of them. I tend to gravitate towards Alan Wake 2 or Dead Space.
Okay.
That said, I think they're all really exceptional, but I think the level of ambience with the survival horror elements of those two, the sound is just elevated in a way that we don't often see in games, and I think the attention to detail of what was accomplished with those games is next level. And I think in terms of, like, the way Alan Wake mixes the weapon noises with the dialogue, with the ambient sound effects of the you know, the rain and the forest, the enemies, everything plays off each other. The music, the little attention to detail, for example, of when you get to the safe haven, safe rooms, the light almost sounds like it's burning you because it's healing you. And it's like the little attention to detail with things like that to just enhance the environments to that next level.
Yeah.
Beyond impressive. So that's awesome. I think for me, it's Alan Wake.
Alan Wake, too. I'm going to agree with you on that.
But like, being, they're all so good. I haven't good.
Heard most of these games, so I'm going
to
take a word
but
for it.
But similar attention to detail in Dead Space and Resident Evil 4. Hi-Fi Rush, I think, is incredible. The way it incorporates music to its sound effects and action and the beat. And like, so I think the sound is a key part of that game.
Yeah.
It dovetails into the next category, which is best score and music. Mm-hmm. But there are some of these where, like, I love the music, but that, like, with Alan Wake, I think the sound design, the audio design, yeah, is particularly impeccable, separate from the music, which I also think is very good. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
Almost have to judge them separately and then as, like, a combined piece in a sense. All right, next up we have best score and music. Our nominees are Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Final Fantasy 16, Hi-Fi Rush, and The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Stacked.
Yeah.
This is stacked as well. This is another one where I can see it going to any of these folks, and I'd be like, yep, that's deserved, you know?
Yeah. You know, we got to see at Game Awards in concert. It's interesting, because we saw Diablo. We heard Diablo, like a medley. And then we also heard the Starfield music.
Mm-hmm.
And then we heard Spider-Man. And none of those are nominated here. And I find that really interesting and a little ironic.
We did hear Final Fantasy at that concert as well, though, and that is highlighted here.
That's true.
I think, to be honest, this grouping makes sense to me. I've played the majority of these games, aside from Baldur's Gate, which I guess I should address. Like I said, it's just not particularly my thing, but I do plan to check it out before Game of the Year. But otherwise, all of these games are absolutely stellar in the way that I think, like, they're all exceptional scores, but then the way they elevate the gameplay and they elevate the storytelling and the environments in which you're in. But yeah, to your point, it is interesting that kind of those obvious heavy hitter AAA games aren't featured here, but I think these stand on another level with these ones. I could literally, it's like time of place, ask me tomorrow what I think, right, and I'll probably change my answer. I have to go with Alan Wake again.
Yeah.
With this one, there's some incredible moments in the game, and I don't want to get into spoilers for folks that haven't played it yet, but the way the music elevates the experience in that game on top of the audio design, in between each chapter, you get to hear original songs that reflect on what's going on in the story. So the Remedy's team originally made, like, and
impressive.
They're different genres, they're different styles, and they're all awesome. Like, they're these cool, like, atmospheric tone poem-esque pieces that are told in pop songs and more ambient music, and like the attention to detail of making them like integral to the plot is some shit that only Remedy would bite off, and I think it's like incredibly cool and incredibly interesting and incredibly unique.
Yeah.
Whereas like I kind of look at Tears of the Kingdom and Final Fantasy as like known quantities of, in a sense of like, those series have always had exceptional music and these entries are no different. But I feel like Alan Wake is like, this is weird and different and new and elevated in a way that like really surprised me this year.
Yeah. I will say I really did like what I heard of the music in Tears of the Kingdom.
Yep. It's phenomenal.
But I don't think it like hit me over the head with how incredible it is.
It's not memorable for that, I would say.
I also think it's a little weird that Hi-Fi Rush is in this category because...
Are you serious? Oh, it's so good.
But it's pre-existing songs.
Not all of them.
Almost exclusively.
No, there's orchestral stuff too.
No, I know, but I just feel like, you know, kind of riding on the coattails of the Foo Fighters and whatever. It feels like, I think that there are other games I would have liked to see in this category more. I would have liked to see Spider-Man be nominated what it is doing with mixing the various genres and the orchestral score in Spider-Man.
I have two things to say to that, because I hear what you're saying, but I would argue that, like, I think compiling a licensed soundtrack is worthy of highlighting here, because that is work and that is thought and that is like intention. And that said, I do think the original music in Hi-Fi Rush is also very good.
Yeah.
And I think the way they incorporate the music into the gameplay, into the narrative, into the DNA of what that game is, I think is very impressive. And I would give that the edge, because that's my like second one. I would give it to Alan Wake prediction first, and then my runner-up would be Hi-Fi Rush. So I okay. think that game absolutely deserves the nod here, and okay. I'm really glad it's represented here.
Right on. I think there's just some games I wish were also represented. But yeah, no, that fair. Being said, I think, you know, like you said, it's a known quantity. It's not necessarily surprising anybody, but the music in Final Fantasy 16 was...
It's
great. It hit you over the head with how great it is. So I'm going to have to go with that one.
Hell yeah. Then next up we have Best Art Direction. Here's where we get to the point of like...
this is where we have our different categories on our Game of the Year, because we... disagree with the concept of one.
Well, it's not that I disagree, it's just hard to highlight everything, because right. this is all within
it's
one
kind of two different,
and it's like, do you approach things. It from like an art aesthetic style? Or do you approach it from a
graphical
fidelity? Yeah, yep. So our nominees are Alan Wake 2, Hi-Fi Rush, Lies of P, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, and Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Just incredibly different approaches to aesthetic. So.
Well, and they're all doing different things. Like, yeah. Alan
How
Wake is
compare...
going for a level of visual realism that
How do you compare
the other
that to
games
Super
just
Mario Bros.
Aren't.
Wonder.
And Hi-Fi Rush has a really cool...
Really cool art style.
...aesthetic and vibe and art style and almost, like, comic book level of, like, colorful, splashy art that's really, really cool. Lies of P is another one where it's, like, taking this... established property of Pinocchio and twisting it in this like dark Lovecraftian
like,
Bloodborne-esque way that's
almost,
like yeah that's also compelling and really
yeah.
interesting. Like, all these games are beautiful. Mario Wonder is doing so many new things visually for that series, and
Tears
it's just like
Kingdom
trippy and
gorgeous.
Weird and out there and
yeah.
yeah.
So I think each of these games is doing something different than each of the other games in the category, and they're all doing it really, really well.
I think it's worth deferring to the description provided by the Game Awards just so we can base our choices here. But for outstanding creative and or technical achievement and artistic direction in animation, the key word of art direction here, it makes me, once again, I know I voted Alan Wake in the last several categories, but...
Artistic design and animation.
The direction of Alan Wake is unlike anything I've ever seen visually in a game. The way it's playing with live action and CG and hand-drawn illustration, and the way every space feels so authentically rendered. But I think the way it's playing with live action and CG is unlike anything I've ever seen in a video game from
yeah.
an artistic standpoint. And like, I think on a technical level the game is stunning,
also very,
but I think
yeah.
from a creative, like artistic, stylistic approach, it's also excelling in
yeah.
that. So it's almost hitting both points for me, where it's like, it is the artsy art direction pick, but it's also the graphical fidelity
right.
powerhouse pick.
Yes, and I think that's key in this case. So I definitely agree with you that Alan Wake makes really solid sense for winning this category.
But they're all phenomenal choices.
Yes.
And I wouldn't be like mad about any of them, but I think I got to a point in Alan Wake today, and everybody will know where I'm at if you've played the game, but visually speaking, I've never seen anything like this in a video game ever. In a good way. I mean,
yeah.
of like, they are doing something so incredibly unique and bending worlds and perception in a way that like, I kind of can't overhype it, because it's
yeah.
just like, it's really special. And I think it definitely deserves the nod.
That's awesome.
Next up we have Best Narrative, a favorite category of mine. Our nominees are Alan Wake, Baldur's Gate 3, Cyberpunk 2077, Phantom Liberty, Final Fantasy 16, and Marvel's Spider-Man 2.
Once again,
stacked. Yeah, I think this is another one where, like, flip a coin, you could give it to any of these, and I'd be like, yeah, that's fair. I think the front runners for me personally would be Alan Wake and Baldur's Gate, just because... Alan Wake is my favorite narrative of
yeah.
the year, but I think Baldur's Gate is transcendent in a way for a lot of folks that it, I think that's those two feel like the big hot button topics. And like, while I adore Spider-Man, I don't think the overall story holds a candle to what Alan Wake and Baldur's Gate are doing in terms of like complexity and multiple ways to interpret them. And in Baldur's Gate's case, like multiple branching paths and countless ways to approach things. Yeah. And like, any character can die, and that splinters off in, you know, any number of ways and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think, once again, this is another really stacked category, but it just makes sense, I think, for Alan Wake to win this category with the
it's so compelling, narrative.
And the, you know, like you said, the different ways to kind of interpret and process what's happening, and it just feels, it feels deep, and it feels thinky but also compelling. So
well, and just the way it's able to straddle the line between survival horror and the more kind of traditional like detective elements that they're doing within the narrative space, but then, like I mentioned, the straddling the lines of CG and live action, and what they're doing with the music, and how I mention all of those elements because all of those things are contributing to the narrative, and they're building this, if you've played other Remedy games, they're building this crazy expanded universe that, like, I've heard folks say it's one of those things where if any other studio attempted this, I would look at it and be like, you're so far up your own ass, I don't even know what I'm looking at here.
Yeah.
But Remedy has crafted this such an interesting world, such an interesting cast of characters, and such interesting connections between their games that I'm just like, give me more, give me more. I'm adoring it. Yeah, and I can't wait to finish it. And I'm really curious to see where it ends up on my Game of the Year list, because I know it's going to be my top five, but I'm just not quite sure where. But
right,
it's,
yeah.
Oh, it's so good. It's so, so good.
That's awesome. So I think we're in agreement on that one. We're both
I've given Alan Wake the last, like, five.
I know.
So
should we move into the next category?
Yeah, let's talk about a new category for the Game Awards this year, Best Adaptation. So our nominees are Castlevania Nocturne, Gran Turismo, The Last of Us, Super Mario Bros. Movie, and Twisted Metal.
So
a mix of TV shows and movies
based on video games.
So
adapted from video games.
I guess this is the first year where we've had like multiple of those that were worthy of highlighting.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've had some weird one-offs where things have been pretty good or interesting, but this is the first year where it's like, oh yeah, there's like several like good notable adaptations.
It's becoming
more popular. I think there's like tiers to it though, but like, in all fairness, with the exception of maybe Gran Turismo, I've heard really good things about Twisted Metal, which I want to watch at some point. The Castlevania series on Netflix has always been
fantastic.
Stellar.
Yeah.
I watched the first season, I want to say, because this is, I want to say maybe this is season three or four, but it's great. It's really, really well done. The Last of Us, absolutely stellar.
Fantastic. That obviously
I think
is
that's
the
slam dunk pick for me. I could see.
The Mario movie was fun, though. It was fun.
Yeah, I think if it was like, but the thing is, even by fan vote, I think The Last of Us takes it. You know what I mean? I think it's not even close. So I'd say Last of Us is the slam dunk.
I feel like they made this category for Last of Us. I feel like if Last of Us didn't exist, they would have been like, hey, this happened, that was cool. But since The Last of Us exists, they're like, we have to talk about this.
But
this
it
is amazing.
But it is cool that we have like
so many
good
properties.
Adaptions. I'm
and
actually wondering, was
I know
it
was really
was
good.
It not the first year that they had this category? Because now that I'm thinking
no,
about it.
No, they had it last
didn't
year.
Didn't they highlight Cyberpunk Edge Runners?
Yeah, they had it last
and
year.
Arcane and
yeah,
so,
they
yeah,
were talking about Arcane.
Okay. So
I was like,
I
feel like that happened,
yeah,
but I could
no,
have also
right. I had to
fever dreamed it, so I'm not going to say anything. But now that you
no,
mentioned
you're good.
It,
yeah now
that
I'm thinking about it, that was right. So my bad on that one. Okay, we're heading into our two final categories.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of our longer episodes in a while, which is really fun, but there's a lot to predict here.
Yeah.
A lot on the line, some would say. So we have our best game direction prediction up next. So our nominees are Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Spider-Man 2, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, and The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. This is another one where, like, any given day, flip a coin might say something different. Where does your brain immediately go
honestly,
with this list of games?
Sounds weird, but my brain immediately goes to Super Mario Bros. Wonder.
Interesting.
Because
okay.
it just so breaks the mold and it's doing something totally new. And Mario's been around for ages. Mario is like synonymous with video games at this point. It's so ubiquitous. And yet they're still finding ways to do new things and, you know, blow our minds and subvert our expectations. And I think that that's really freaking impressive. And then we talked a ton about Alan Wake too, so I would throw that out there too.
I would say, I think the other one in consideration for me is Zelda.
Zelda, yeah.
Because I think, to your point about Mario, I think it's really cool to see the team that made Breath of the Wild look at what made that game successful and then elevate it in a way that I don't think anybody thought was possible. Yeah. Like, they took a game that was incredibly well-regarded, highly critically successful, commercially successful. Countless people have it as one of their favorite games of all time, myself included, to then come out with Tears of the Kingdom that I think is better. A better game in every conceivable way and gives new gameplay mechanics. Like I said, breaks the game in terms of the level of creativity. You're literally phasing through objects. Like, I remember when the game came out, there was so much discussion of like, wow, imagine being a kid and having this being your first Zelda. Like, every game is kind of ruined for you in a sense of like, what do you mean I can't phase through objects and there's not an overworld above me and below me and countless things to do that are all interesting and compelling in their own regard, and like the sense of exploration, the physics engine. Like, I think there's just a lot of intricate systems within Zelda that's like, that had to come from the game direction, you know, that had to come from the leadership. And obviously, like, it was a team effort, but like, that must have been incredibly daunting to, you know, I imagine that first board meeting after Breath of the Wild. It's like, what are we going to do for a console that's has a lot of technical limitations, but
it still looks good looking at you, Pokemon.
But they like did so much with what they had, so I think that's incredibly impressive. All of these games are incredibly impressive in their own regard. I think for me, I'm gonna go Zelda on this one.
Makes sense.
Even though I do think, I think about Sam Lake and I think about the direction of Alan Wake and how special and interesting and weird and twisted that game is, and how I do think he had a lot of the creative vision behind that game, and I know it was a passion project for him and the team to make that game after 13 years between Alan Wake and Alan Wake 2, so like that's kind of where I'm struggling. So I think it's almost like we have Game of the Year next, and are they the nominees are almost the same. I think they're all of the same plus Resident Evil
4.
Okay,
only difference.
So in my mind, game direction goes to one game and Game of the Year goes to another.
Maybe not,
it's hard to say.
They put Resident Evil in Game of the Year just so that it could win. That was a joke.
Yeah, it's just so wild because back when Tears of the Kingdom came out, I couldn't have seen a world where that didn't win Game of the Year. But I feel like we are in this place where it's like it could be one of these other games that we're talking about. So sorry, what was your final prediction for game direction?
Oh, I didn't have one yet.
Oh, you're still mulling it over. I'm in a tough place. I'm trying to decide what I want to go for game of the year and if that's the same
for
game
direction. But don't overthink it. I'm going to give you the advice you gave me an hour and a half ago.
That's true. Thank you. I appreciate it. Very sage wisdom.
I'm torn between Mario and Alan Wake.
I think I'm going to go Alan Wake for game direction. I'm changing.
Okay. Now I want to say Zelda.
Well, because I want to go for game of the year, I'm going to go Zelda because...
Interesting, okay.
I think across the industry, across every generation, across fans of video games, young and old, I think Zelda is transcendent. I think Zelda is representative of the industry this year. I think it is an incredibly innovative game. I think it deserves the recognition. It will go down in the history books. And I think game direction, to me, makes a lot of sense for Alan Wake because I do think there was a lot of creative vision that had to go into the production of that game and the writing of that game and the creation of that game. So I would love to see Sam Lake get that
recognition.
That's my prediction. So I'm going game direction for
Alan Wake 2.
Alan Wake 2.
And Game of the Year Zelda.
For Zelda. That's my prediction.
Question.
Sure.
Did you predict Spider-Man for any of these awards? Or is it going to be another thing? Like when the first Spider-Man
did I do it?
Came out?
Did I, Let's scroll back through real quick because I'm worried.
Because I don't think that you did.
No, you did accessibility.
Accessibility. Damn, babe.
Oof. That's such a gut punch. Because as of right now, Spider-Man is my
front runner for game of the year.
Ouch. Does it hurt? So tough. That's the thing, though, that's kind of fun about this is because, like, between Alan Wake, Spider-Man, and Zelda, that's my top three.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure where each of them are falling yet because I have until the end of the year to deliberate on that. But gosh, what a year. Because in any other year, each of those games would have been my game, you know what I mean? With a bullet. Like, God, what a great year. And there's countless other games that we're not even talking about on this list. You know, outside of this list, like just so many games
I think great year. I think that for game direction, I'm going to go with Zelda because of all the reasons that you said, which were all great reasons. You convinced me. And then for game of the year, I'm also going to go with Zelda.
So we're keeping it. Or you're going Zelda for both.
For both.
Okay.
Yep.
Got it.
Go on Zelda for both.
Locking it in. Okay. We'll have to, on our next episode, well, I don't think on our next episode, the Game Awards will have happened yet. But once they do, we'll... Mm-hmm. We'll come back and we'll discuss
the seventh. Yeah, so they won't have happened yet.
Yeah, we'll have an episode in between, and then we'll have an episode the following week. So, all right, very good, very good. We predicted everything. Gonna be great. Shall we head into our closing segment, Questions with Claire?
All right, let's do it. After all of that talk, here is the Questions with Claire for this week. What is a game that came out this year that was not highlighted in any of these categories? Bonus points if it wasn't highlighted in our conversation yet at all, that you would like to highlight as a really great game that came out this year.
For sure. I think the first immediate one that comes to mind is a game that I talked about on our Steam Next Fest episode after playing the demo, and that's Jusant from Dontnod that I got a chance to play via Xbox Game Pass. It came out on Halloween. A really, really wonderful game. It's pretty short. I beat it in under 5 hours, but it's a narrative game where your character is climbing up a mountain structure, and you find notes and different environmental storytelling pieces from people that used to live on the mountain, and it's really beautiful. It's really fun. It uses a physics-based mechanic where you're using each arm is assigned to a button.
Yeah.
And so you're using your triggers to climb. And I found it incredibly satisfying and very meditative. And I talked about it on that Next Fest episode. But now that I've played the full game, I think it's an incredibly compelling game. I think it's arguably Dontnod's best game.
Wow.
Because I think from a narrative perspective, it does some really interesting things. And from a visual perspective, it's really fun. And I think it's some of the best climbing in video games. So it totally worth playing. It's available on Xbox and PC. Had a blast with it and would highly recommend it. And it's one that, like, it came out on the 31st of October between all of these crazy giant releases. And so I think it'll probably get swept under the rug, unfortunately, but I really hope folks check it out, and especially since it is available on Game Pass, like, there's no barrier to entry, and it's really worth your time.
Yeah, I'm a couple hours into Jusant, and I would also highlight that game is great so far. I would also highlight a game that hasn't come up yet, but that I really loved, Planet of Lana, which I played over the summer. It came out in the spring.
Nice.
And it is, I understand why it wasn't nominated for any of these very stacked categories. I think in another year it might have been.
Sure.
I once again understand why it wasn't nominated in the music category, but I do want to highlight that game has some really fantastic, absolutely beautiful music, orchestral, as well as an original song. And the way the music is part of the narrative is also really, really special. The puzzles, I enjoyed them. The platforming, I enjoyed it. Not the best platforming in the world. I've talked about that before in the pod. But,
yeah, we did a pretty in-depth review of that one, if listeners are interested, back in March, I want to say.
But just, you know, continuing to ruminate on it since then, I have really, enjoyed the characters, the narrative, the constructed language, the world, the environmental storytelling. It was all great. I really loved Planet of Lana. We also didn't talk very much about how special an experience Baccarat is.
Yeah.
The fact that, I mean, not going too heavy into spoilers, but your experience can vary wildly.
Really great.
And it really subverts puzzle game. Your expectations mm-hmm. of co-op as a genre. And honestly, Game for Impact, like, it has some really interesting commentary on mental health and, like, family issues.
Yeah, it's a very mature story. Yeah. All things can. I didn't expect it going in, and I was pleasantly surprised by how deep that game really went.
It's quite deep. It's very good.
Nice.
And then I think one other game that I haven't played the full game of, but that I've really enjoyed the demo of, and it is out, so you can check it out now if you want to, and that's Slay the Princess, which is mm-hmm. really, really cool game.
Yeah, I'm playing that one in tandem right now with Alan Wake, and it's been a blast. So yeah. I'm excited to talk about. I'm sure that one will come up more in future convos.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely.
Heck yeah, that's awesome. All right, well, closing out the show, some quick housekeeping items for y'all. Reminder that we have moved to a bi-weekly release schedule, so new episodes are published every other Monday. You can also check out episodes of Crossplay Conversations featuring myself, Joseph Hooper, and Jacob McCourt on all your podcast platforms, as well as a video version on YouTube at youtube.com/crossplayconvos. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Claire, thank you so much. For joining, as always. It was a blast making the pizza bets. Maybe I'll win this year. I don't know. I'm feeling hopeful. But I'm also feeling like we had a lot of similar picks. So we'll see how that shakes out. But some quick final housekeeping items for you listeners. Please subscribe to our show on your podcast platform of choice. Drop us a review wherever you listen. We are now officially on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, and more. If you enjoy our podcast, consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/lukewarmgames for exclusive podcasts and more. You can go ahead and follow at lukewarmgames on Twitter to get the latest updates on our show. And with that, have a fantastic week. Cheers and happy gaming.